Please remember, the views and opinions expressed by this show or any other show on DV Radio and its guests are strictly those of said individuals and do not reflect those of the DV Radio staff, nor the staff of Dysfunctional Veterans.
Welcome to the Service Dog Show. I'm your host, Joaquin Watai, also known as PTS Dog.
And I'm your host, Scav.
I want to let the audience know, you know, Scav and I, we've worked together. We share information back and forth.
I run Scout as my service dog. He's a hearing dog, PTSD dog.
We're here to bring you news, interviews, and information about service dogs and about matters that are of interest to the service dog community.
Thank you for joining us on the Service Dog Show on DV Radio, WDVR.
And welcome to the Service Dog Show. I'm your host, Joaquin Watai, also known as PTS Dog.
I'm your host, Scav.
With us today, we're excited to have Boone Cutler. Boone, tell the audience who you are in case they've never heard your name before.
That's actually harder than what it sounds. My name is Boone Cutler. I'm a warfighter. I served in Iraq 2005, 2006. After I was injured, I spent 2 years at Walter Reed Army Medical Center during the neglect scandal between 2006 and 2008. Since then, I fought my way through a lot of drug addictions, through a lot of different suicidal issues. And, that eventually led to the Spartan Pledge, which I authored years and years ago. But I always say, and I want to make it clear, you know, I may have authored the Spartan Pledge, but it belongs to everybody. You know, it belongs to the community. It's not mine. And, use it how you will. And then, what else after that? I really got very understanding different types of therapies that were working for combat veterans, you know, specifically with TBI, PTSD, chronic pain, those types of things. And then later on, I ran into stem cells after a traumatic brain injury resulting in central sleep apnea. It turned into a heart condition. The heart condition almost killed me. Mm-hmm. And the combination of the heart condition from the brain damage and kidney disease secondary to just too many years of drugs, specifically opiates, led to my demise. That's what was killing me until I went to Panama and I got stem cell therapy and learned about what I needed to do for the central sleep apnea and started handling that. And here I am, I'm alive again. So it's been a pretty interesting ride, and that's my story in a nutshell. And I know I left out quite a bit, but I think this is relative to what we're talking about today.
Yeah. Yeah. And the reason you're here now, Boone, you do not have a service dog, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And I want the audience to understand that what we're discussing today is navigating alternative therapies or alternate therapies with the VA and dealing with the bureaucratic resistance. And that's the reason I brought you on, is because you've had a lot of experience dealing with that bureaucratic resistance and helping veterans navigate kind of the, you know, there are some things that the VA is okay with. They're doing this battlefield acupuncture at almost every VA now. They're spending thousands of dollars, tens of thousands of dollars on equine therapy. They'll send you to the ranch to go play with the horses for 12 weeks. But when it comes to using a service dog, especially for PTSD, you get a mixed bag, mostly leaning to the resistance side. So you've dealt with some controversial treatment modalities, such as medical marijuana, the use of cannabis, and CBD, and I kind of want to bring your experience into the picture in talking to veterans who are trying to find a way to convince their treatment team that maybe there's some other options rather than the zombie dope. And let's talk about the zombie dope. Please, by all means, talk about the zombie dope.
Great. My experience with the medications is started at Walter Reed. And, you know, Walter Reed, at the end of the day, just had way, way too many, you know, wounded, sick, ill, you know, just had too many patients for the amount of hospital, for the amount of doctors that they had. And so, you know, under those conditions, they had to mitigate the conditions by certain means of control. And the way they controlled this was with drugs, a lot of drugs. And you know, I used to be very bitter about that. But I don't know why it happened that way. So maybe I shouldn't be so bitter, but I've definitely been bitter about how it affected me and how it affected other people, you know, directly. And that was a real problem. When the 2007 neglect scandal broke, you know, I really tried to follow that. I was out of my mind at the time, but I tried to follow that because, and I did on the follow-up, on the follow-ups to those investigations, I did meet with members of Congress at Walter Reed and tried to explain things. And by then it was, they were trying to do their best, but I really think they were doing probably the best they could with what they had at the time. People just, we were not prepared for so many people to survive the injuries they survived. You know, and I think that's a good thing. But this was the fallout from that. The fallout from that was, you know, when a lot of people survive their injuries on the battlefield, you know, we have less combat deaths, therefore we have more severely wounded to deal with.
Right.
And that's what we were dealing with at that time at Walter Reed. And so they, so our country, our, you know, our military medical establishment really had not had this situation before, but what they did have on hand was drugs, a lot of drugs. And, you know, when you've got so many people housed for so long, I mean, again, I was there for 2 years, you know, you have people there and that sounds like a lot, but I knew a lot of guys there that were there for 2 years.
That's a prison sentence.
The way they managed it was to, yeah, I mean, I got out after a congressional inquiry, you know, filed a congressional to get an investigation on why they were keeping me for so long. But, they had, and they couldn't process people through, you know, they were trying to process people's retirements into a system that there at that time, there was very, very poor, connectivity between active duty military and the VA and how we were going to get guys to make that transition. People have forgotten a lot of this now, but so it's good to review it. I'm just kind of going to kind of spout it out here because people have forgotten it. I'm remembering it right now and it needs to really not be forgotten. At that time they were discharging huge amounts of people, that were being injured, that were injured. Plus there were some other things. So again, this backlog or this bottleneck of more people surviving wounds on the battlefield than being in a VA, being in a military medical situation like Walter Reed or Bethesda or Balboa, BAMC, you know, from that point, you know, maybe some of those guys handled it a little bit better, but at Walter Reed, there was a big bottleneck for care and then bottleneck again to get your retirement done, your discharge, so you could get out. Right. And I saw the guys that were working on, what is it, the MEBs, the medical evaluation boards. It's not like they were sitting back, you know, sipping Mai Tais at the pool. They were working. They had a lot to do. And everybody had a lot to do. And the way they mitigated was with the drugs. You know, okay, how do we keep the natives under control while we're dealing with all this, while we're dealing with this vessel that's not big enough for all of them? Mm-hmm. How do we keep them under control? Mm-hmm. Here's your Ambien, here's your Xanax, here's your chlorohydrate, you know, and go hang out in your room.
Right. My injury happened. I was a Navy, a Navy veteran, and I broke my back. And my discharge process happened between 2010 and 2011 after they recognized they had all these problems there. So my initial diagnosis of PTSD, I was still on active duty. I spent 23 days in a hospital. And the first thing they did, which was what was still protocol at that point in time, was drugs. And I was 8 different medications, 35 pills a day, or something ridiculous like that. I mean, it was excessive. But at the same time, they shuffled me. I was stationed at NORAD Northcom in Colorado Springs. They shuffled me into a processing program where at Fort Carson, it wasn't, now they call it the Warrior Transition Unit. This was like the pre-Warrior Transition Unit where they sent me to Balboa and Balboa farmed me out to the different VA hospitals in the region, and they did coincidental medical board and disability evaluation. And when they decided, yes, I was being boarded, I popped out of the Navy in a newly minted civilian with 50% disability. Just boing, there you go. And there, it was seamless. I don't know if they're still doing that, but at that point in time, that was unheard of.
What year was that?
This was 2010, 2011. I ultimately was okay. Yeah, 2011.
Yeah. I'm talking about the era of, you know, basically from the time GWAT began up until probably about 2008. Around 2008, right. they started doing it the way you're talking about.
Yeah.
But prior to that, that was the result of the debacle that the guys before had gone through.
Right.
And just waiting for, I mean, now check this out. You want to talk about fucked up. All of a sudden, you're a civilian and we're going to discharge you with 70%. Okay. Because that happens to some guys. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then you go file your medical claim with the VA. Well, in between that time, okay, you're fucked up. You're somewhere on the planet, okay, other than in a hospital and other than on active duty. You file your claim for the VA. Now, they take 2 years at that point for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Okay, they were taking years. So how is that warfighter in that, you know, in that chasm between the both sides, how are they expected to survive? And that was a big problem. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, they were continuing the same type of drug therapies. Mm-hmm. So if you didn't have a benevolent family or a benevolent person in your life, you know, for me personally, I had, they got done with mine pretty quick. They 90%ed me, you know, within, I want to say within the 6 to 9 months after I got off active duty. But I still would have, and that was fast.
Yeah.
But I still would have had, but other guys, I mean, there were a lot of guys that waited a lot of time because during the same time frame, don't forget this little factor, they opened up the ability to file in a lot of claims for Agent Orange.
Right.
And so there was a huge rush and the guys got priority. And I understand that. There was a huge rush of Vietnam veterans that were filing claims on Agent Orange related injuries or illnesses. And that got slammed at the same time they got slammed with all the guys with GWAT and trying to get them through the transitioning part of off active duty with your military retirement and then into the VA so you can get your disability retirement. That change, you know, that had to happen, but it did not happen fast. And there was, you know, I'm glad to hear that your process was easier. I think but that was the result of the problems that I'm talking about.
Yeah.
That was the result. So it did get handled. So when you look back, this is important for people to listen to and understand. When we're talking about making changes in the government, okay, I've been doing what I do, advocacy work, activism, 10 years now. And I thought we would get to the point we're at right now in about 3 years with some good marketing. It's taken 10 years. Mm-hmm. So those that are out there, but we didn't have a lot of people doing this kind of stuff. I mean, there was, when I had Tipping Point and Boone Cutler, it was the only radio show, you know, and now, you know, there's a lot of podcasts, there's a lot of different things, and they're popular. It's, you know, podcasts have been accepted as legitimized media now. Mm-hmm. And I blame Joe Rogan for that. I think he's the one that really blew that up and did it well. And people accepted it as another additional form of legitimate media. But at that time, when I started radio, you know, podcast was like, oh, you got a blog talk show? What's that take? You know, $10 a month on a cell phone. And if people didn't respect it, they wouldn't even tune in. But now it's changed. And that's why I love that you guys have your show, because it is legitimate. It is righteous. It will attract guests that are legitimate and can speak intelligently on situations like I'm trying to do right now. So anyway, back to that situation, I'm trying to say, you know, we can't forget this history. It takes a longer time than you think to make change. Mm-hmm. So when we commit to things in the future, we have to understand as a country and as a people, like in this situation, when we committed to this war, and I'm all for that, you know, I don't really get into the politics of the wars that I'm deployed to because my job is to cut, and where they swing is where they swing. My job is to cut. So I'm not worried about that. But When we decide to go to war, we really need to make sure that the capabilities on the back end can take care of the, those war fighters that went and did what they needed to do.
Right.
And because the, and if we hear the government say, well, we'll make immediate changes. Well, let me tell you what the fuck immediate changes looks like. It looks like a lot of people dead by suicide. It looks like a lot of drug addictions. And it looks like it's, you know, going to take about, you know, almost more than half a decade.
Yeah.
That's what immediate changes looks like. So people should be aware of what that vernacular means.
Yeah, well, really, I think the entropy of bureaucracy is what is most guilty for killing veterans, for the veteran suicide rate. I think that just the fact that what we're trying to deal with is a bureaucracy that is so entrenched and has been so entrenched for so long that getting any change is a grueling process. It's brutal. You know, in the service dog world, to kind of bring it and get this all related, the VA finally this year is scheduled to publish the results of a 10 years pilot program / study on the effectiveness of service dogs for helping disabled veterans deal with PTSD. They've been doing this stop and start and fits and starts for 10 years. And we're just now getting ready to get a report. And it's just,
that's a really screwed up thing. And, you know, I haven't seen a secretary of the VA really get behind, you know, they've treated service dogs a lot of in the same way they treated CBD.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they treated cannabis. It's if the majority of people want it and it can't hurt you, then why can't you have it? Mm-hmm. Because the majority of the people don't want the things that can hurt you, but they're willing to give you that. Okay. Yeah. We've got to change this paradigm. And, you know, I understand the plane tree movement within the VA system. Hey, let's use what works based upon, you know, the patient and being more, you know, patient-centered care. And that's fantastic. That's great. It's not the people at the hospital level. It is the people at the bureaucratic level.
Yes.
And the hospitals, you know, I know my doctors, most of my doctors are in the same boat I am. You know, they want to do more, but don't have enough to do it. You know, there's a bill that's getting ready to hit the floor. It's going to change all that. It's going to change it very quickly. You know, I'm going to reach back out to you guys and, you know, we can talk about it now too, but, the biggest problem is the VA has, as an institution, has not said, let's go try the newer things that people want. They said, okay, as long as there's no controversy involved and there's no cost involved, let's do that. But if there's controversy or cost, then we're not going to do that. And by controversy, what I'm talking about, I mean, you know how the game changes. If all of a sudden the VA says, yeah, we're going to start using CBD as part of in their formulary. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. Drug companies are going to shit themselves, literally shit themselves.
And the
growers
are right. And they're, you know, they're going to go.
And they're
the
lobbyists. Yeah, the lobbyists start, you know, having problems and they are going to start speaking up on behalf of the drug companies. And then you've got politicians going, well, I'm not so sure about that cannabis stuff. And that's right. Really how it happens.
Yep.
Anybody who thinks it's different is living in a dream world. You know, I mean, whatever you're smoking, stay, keep on it because your life is good. It's not a thing. But the service dog thing, you know, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, who can be against that?
That's a great comparison. And when it comes to politics, you just hit it on the head. You know, if it works, the politicians fight it because they're not making money on it. You know, mm-hmm. cannabis, kratom, whatever, service dogs, they want to all throw that up because Big Pharma is their moneymaker. You know, they get money on Vicodin. They get money on all these damn
billions, pills. Billions. Yeah.
They
billions.
Get money on the Topamax I got to take for, you know, my shakes. and all this other shit when, you know, if you twist me up a joint, I don't have to take these pain pills and I don't got to take this shit for my seizures and everything else. But they don't want to hear that because they don't get any money from it. It's easier for them to charge me hundreds and thousands of dollars a year to take all these damn prescriptions and go see these doctors and piss in a bottle and draw blood every month.
You know, it's really simple. You are absolutely right. And it's really simple. I tell people this all the time. I say, you want to know how the world works? Okay, here's what you do. I want you to take this weekend and do exactly what I'm telling you, okay? I want you to watch Godfather 1, Godfather 2, and the first six seasons of Vikings. That's the way the world works.
Right.
Yep, yep. Well, and what's I think it's a good point that you brought up, going back to the money thing, another reason that I think the bureaucracy is resistant to service dogs is that almost universally, veterans who are using service dogs for PTSD stop taking the meds. I did it stupidly. I should have had cooperation with my psychiatrist and weaned. I quit cold turkey, and it nearly fucking killed me. I almost died.
Oh, dude, I get it. I did 17 days locked down doing that.
Yeah,
I was behind two locked doors. I was behind two locked doors. I don't know how you pulled it off, but God bless you for doing it.
Dude,
but we want to tell the audience, don't try it on your own because you can stop your fucking heart. Or you might blow your fucking head off in some sort of psychosis delusion.
Yeah, don't
psychotic delusion.
Do that. Yeah. Do not stop cold turkey.
If you're going to come off a drug, do it smart to get help.
I did it dumb. I you know how I did it was I was living up in the mountains in central Colorado. The nearest neighbor was like a mile and a half away. And so
before you do this, I just want you to know I have the scene playing out in my head where Rocky is in Russia preparing to fight Drago. Just so you know, that's what I see in my head. But go ahead, tell
trees
me
and rocks.
Here.
Yeah, there you go.
I mean, running up snowy mountains, you know, that kind of stuff.
Well, I was living in a GP medium in the middle of winter.
A little different. Gotcha. Yeah. Okay. Go ahead.
If you say you're wearing a bearskin thong, I'm shutting this down.
I was not wearing a banana hammock. Thank you very much. But it was literally, in order to survive going cold turkey from the meds, I was living in such a manner that I had to survive. So it was either get up and start the fire and cook the food and feed the dogs and shovel snow and split wood, and, you know, rinse and repeat, or freeze to death. And that's how I'm still trying to figure out how I survived, because that was a very tough time. But I did it. I made it. And I absolutely do not recommend anybody do it cold turkey. Talk to your psychiatrist. Do it safely. Because let me tell you, those drugs are no joke. And I'd at that point been on them for 5 or 6 years. Yeah, so
drug dependency of any kind, whether it's what the doctors prescribed you, whether it's the antipsychotic drugs, it's a nightmare to come off. I've been on a couple of different ones, both voluntarily and non-voluntarily. Mm-hmm. And it's no good, man. You said, if sweating that stuff out is a brutal bastard.
Oh yeah. But like I said, though, another reason,
and it's not like movies, you know, like you watch Johnny Cash, you know, all of a sudden you come to and June's feeding you some berries, you know.
No,
it's not really like that.
No, it's nothing like that.
No,
it's not a couple days.
What the fuck's wrong with you? Why are you doing this? Why are you behaving this way? And you don't know. And so,
no, I mean, true psychosis can occur, people. I mean, those listening. And that means you do not understand. Your reality is different than everybody else's. And people can get really fucking hurt. And it's not a joke thing. It's a scary fucking thing. Like, you can easily traumatize yourself and others and not even know you're doing it. So we're not fucking around when we're talking about this. Yeah, we laugh and make jokes, banana hammock and, you know, bear skin thong. But no, it's not like that. You will fuck yourself up. The hospital that I did it in was a suicide-proofed room because of the likelihood. They had hourly bed checks because it's that kind of dangerous.
Right.
Yeah. And that's the kind of things that they're giving us to try to control us. drugs that have those black box warnings. You know, when you get that 9 mile long printout at the pharmacy, there's a black box in the upper right hand corner of that long sheet, and it tells you what the bad side effects are. And almost every single one of those psych drugs, one of those bad side effects is suicidal ideation. Almost all of them.
Yeah. And it's let's underline that, but let's add to it too. The situation that has been, I think, prolifically fucking cruel by the medical establishment, probably because of their own ignorance, but it's changing now, is the fact that so many guys with traumatic brain injury, we're talking shell shock, okay? Mm-hmm. Traumatic brain injury, shell shock, they were trying to treat brain damage with psych meds,
mm-hmm.
okay? We're not talking about psychiatric issues. We're talking about brain damage. We're talking about people who are frustrated out of their fucking minds. I can speak to this because I've been through some stem cell therapy, and so I know how that works on TBI, and I can compare how I was before and how I am now. And I have loved ones who tell me how I was before and how I am now, and so I can tell you the difference. I've done it within a year. I know what I'm talking about. I'm probably the only fucking warfighter to serve under the current war that's done this. So I know what I'm talking about. I was treated for psychiatric conditions that were brain damage, traumatic brain injury. And that's why the psych meds don't work, because right. you're only creating more cognitive issues. When you have the brain injury issue and you're dealing with memory problems, you're dealing with cognitive issues, you become frustrated, you get confused, you get mad. And what really needs to happen, here's the answer. Someone needs to be able to establish that training and say, let me explain to you, though you don't want to hear it, what you're going to experience. My problem is people are telling me, you have traumatic brain injury. And I say, okay, like that's a fucking explanation for what I should expect. You know, if someone says you have liver cancer, you can go, oh, well, what can I expect? Well, you're going to expect this, 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 and that. How do you deal with it? This way, that way. Okay, they will tell you. And when they tell you you have traumatic brain injury, they never tell you resulting in what.
Right.
It's just this ominous fucking thing out there called traumatic brain injury, but resulting in what? Here's what mine resulted in. Central sleep apnea that I did not know about, nobody told me about, and almost killed me because it turned into a heart condition. What's that called? Soldier's heart. See, we had all the lingo correct back when, and then we turned it all into a motherfucking psych issue for the drugs. But they had the lingo correct in the past. Soldier's heart. What is soldier's heart? It comes from guys having brain damage from being in battle, which causes central sleep apnea, and their heart stops. Okay? That's what happens. Shell shock. What was shell shock? It was fucking traumatic brain, post-concussive syndrome. It was shell shock. It was from high-order explosives going off around you, causing brain damage. You come home, you would be different because you had brain damage.
Mm-hmm.
We have the same thing today, except they wrapped it all into PTSD, and here's a list of drugs you get for that, and traumatic brain injury. That is just a thing that sits out there, and we're not exactly sure what's going to present. Mine presented central sleep apnea and Parkinson's. Mm-hmm. I had undiagnosed Parkinson's for years and years. The psychiatric effects, the psychological effects that Parkinson's causes, nobody told me. As I got the Parkinson's under control, as I got off the drugs, and I started dealing with brain injury, I got better.
Mm-hmm.
My symptoms didn't get better. But I didn't want to put a bullet in my head every fucking day because I could intellectualize my situation. We're not giving warfighters the opportunity to intellectualize their situation. Therefore, they have limited coping strategies and they just feel confused.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You're tagging this thing all day long, man, because I mean, that's just, I'm telling you what.
Us our stories.
And it's taken me, 1991, and I'm just now figuring this shit out, you know, and it took a doctor and a psychologist to figure this shit out for me.
Yeah.
You know, we blew a bunch of shit up with pop and drops, and, you know, you've only got a 30 to 45 second fuse. You're getting blown halfway across the fucking desert, and God only knows what you just blown up.
Yeah.
You know, now I've got all these fucking shakes and they can't tell me why I'm shaking. Well, it's the fucking chemicals.
Brother, listen, yeah, you need stem cell therapy. Let me throw you, this is interesting. I want everybody to pay close attention. We're going to do a compare and contrast, but with a little bit of a variation. We're going to take what's called post-traumatic stress disorder, and we're going to look at a person that's been raped. We're going to look to a person that's been put in prison. We're going to look to a person that has been gone through a natural disaster. Someone's gone through a horrible car wreck. We're going to wrap all together. We're going to call it PTSD, okay? All these groups, we're going to call that's their PTSD. Now we're going to take something a little bit different called combat-related PTSD. Now we're going to put that in a separate group. Now we're going to look back both groups and goes, huh, this combat-related PTSD thing seems to have a lot more symptoms and result in a lot more suicide than the other group of PTSD. Statistically speaking, factually speaking, I'm absolutely correct. I'm comparing now.
Right.
Okay, now we continue to compare. Well, what is it that this combat-related PTSD group has that this other group doesn't have? One, they've got heavy metal toxicity. If you've spent more than a day on a fucking range or in a shoot house, your lead levels have been through the roof, toxic level to your brain. What else? How many times has that happened in the military? How many times you've been on a range? How many times you've been in a shoot house? Okay, that happened every time. Okay, the other group over here, they didn't have that. So let's put that on the list over here with this combat-related PTSD, because if you've got combat-related PTSD, you went through the training to get yourself into combat. Therefore, you've been on a range, you've been in a shoot house, you've been around explosives. Let's continue to go on. Inoculations. Okay, the vaccine. Let's take the anthrax shot. How did the anthrax shot affect other people, affect us? Well, that's only on the combat-related PTSD side. That's not on the other PTSD side. See how we're starting to wrap a lot of things into this PTSD diagnosis that really are not PTSD? And if we don't start to unravel these things, we can't get ourselves into the PTSD group. We're still under the combat-related PTSD group, which has a lot more things associated with it. And that's why the suicide rate's high. That's why other problems are problems, like homelessness, all the post-combat life changes, divorce, jail, all this stuff. Okay, so we're going to continue here. The other PTSD group doesn't have the vaccinate, doesn't have anthrax shots. The other group wasn't given mefloquine, the anti-malaria pill that causes brain damage.
Right.
The other group wasn't exposed to heavy metal toxic levels into their bloodstream, which causes brain damage. Okay, let's keep going on. The combat-related PTSD, because that's what they put on everybody in the combat-related PTSD. They call it PTSD, but look at all the other factors that are involved. What else happens with them? Let's throw in let's put that combat-related PTSD right next to the group that says traumatic brain injury and interlink them. Because if you've got traumatic brain injury from war, guess what? You've also got combat-related PTSD. And the traumatic brain injury equals what? More brain damage.
Mm-hmm.
And how did we treat both those groups, the combat-related PTSD and the TBI group? How did we treat them? As if they were psych patients.
Right. Nortriptyline, amitriptyline, Prozac. Oh.
And let's take, again, every one of those things that I listed out, heavy metal toxicity, mefloquine. What else did I list out there, guys? The combat-related PTSD.
Heavy metal toxicity.
Heavy metal, all these things, every one of them has a suicidal component.
You know what else?
Every one of them.
You know what else they all have? They are all occupational hazards. Just by the nature of the occupation, you're exposed to this. You get pieces of that puzzle because you're in the military. So,
which I'm cool with. I volunteered to do it. But yeah. Let's take care of the problem the right way.
Yeah,
we've got to unravel the brain damage out of the psychiatric issues and deal with the brain damage.
Yeah,
so the psychiatric issues don't exist, rather than treating the symptom of the psychiatric the psychiatric condition that presents.
Mm-hmm.
Once you get rid of the brain damage, the other stuff no longer exists. So now you can stand alone PTSD right next to the other group once you pulled those things, the brain damage things out.
Yeah.
Now you can treat us both the same. Yeah. Until then, we still fall under combat-related PTSD, comorbid with all these other conditions, resulting in a higher rate of suicide. Mm. And then you throw the meds, because they throw the meds on that, and just like you said, the black box warning.
Yep.
Now you're saying, let's supercharge these suicidal shit.
Right.
Let's throw the drug, let's throw that right on the fire. Okay?
Yeah.
Because they're treating our group, combat-related PTSD group, the same way they're treating that other group.
Yep.
Tremendous failure point.
It's been 1991, 92 since I've been outside or in any kind of light without sunglasses on.
Mm-hmm.
It's just amazing. It's instant headaches.
It's all that exposure and all the crap that happened to us. Yeah. What kills me is, who are the people who are talking about this? The people who
we are right now.
Yeah, the people who are suffering it.
But what happens is,
this is the conversation that needs to be being had in front of Congress.
But Joaquin, what happens is, you go to a shrink and you talk to them at the VA, and they don't want to hear any of this bullshit.
Yeah, exactly. They want to hide it. They want to, oh well, here, take these pills and pacify.
And they
I don't think they're trying to hide it. I think they're following the protocol that they were taught based upon what they said we have.
Right.
What I've just explained to you is, remember I said before, change does not happen as fast as we want. It's taken us 10 years to get here.
Yep.
Okay. If we would have, but we got here as a, it's linear. We got here in a progression to understand, to be able to understand this knowledge. Had we had this knowledge in 2004, 2005, mm-hmm. there would be a lot less issues. We didn't have the knowledge. That's why we have to speak about it now, so we can learn from it and help the next guys, you know, because that's what it's back. That's what it's about. It's about reaching back, right?
Well,
as elders, now we know.
Mm-hmm.
So as elders, it's incumbent upon us to make sure other people know.
Yep.
And that's what your show does.
91, 92, PTSD was just being tagged PTSD.
Right. They had just basically named the terminology back then.
Right.
Yeah. And it wasn't a big issue until Boone's era, when he was at Walter Reed, and we started seeing, was it 2008 or 2009 that the media started looking, saying, well, what's wrong with all these veterans?
And first
of all, there were so many. But that's when PTSD became they've got the PTSD,
right?
You know,
and it was
the PTSD, they got the PTSD,
right?
And that's when we saw the service dog organizations start springing up. It's when we saw the big pushes for Wounded Warrior Project and all these big major name nonprofit organizations,
and the only thing they would do is they would treat us like we were mental patients, and, you know, they'd put us on the high doses of like Prozac. And then, you know, of course they would prove us wrong because, you know, we put our hands through mirrors and because there wasn't nothing wrong with us. You know, they were confusing our brains.
Yep.
You know, it was a head injury. It wasn't PTSD.
Well, or
we had PTSD, but it's not.
Yeah, like Boone said, it's comorbid. You fix the head injury, then you can start dealing with the PTSD.
Right.
That's
the other symptoms go away. Like,
I
can attest to this because once I've dealt with the central sleep apnea with the CPAP machine, and people who are weird about that need to get over it because it's not that bad. You've done worse things, so suck it up. You know, just be done with it.
If you've ever dressed out in firefighting equipment, you can handle the CPAP.
I live with a sleep apnea, though.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the thing. And if you have brain damage, you need to be on a CPAP machine or you're going to fucking die. I'm telling you because I've done it.
Yeah.
Okay, now as a result of me, you know, having my life saved by stem cells, I had another benefit, which was, how did it affect traumatic brain injury? Because the stem cell therapy I got down in Panama, you can't even do in the United States. And so I've experienced something unique. And I can tell you that cognitively, I am different. The migraines still suck. I still have fun with that, but I have a way to deal with it. The memory issues are still a fucking problem. My short-term memory is utterly fucked. I will still burn down the house if I try and cook a hot dog.
Yeah.
That's very, you know, keeping things in order. Did I just take my medication? Did I not take my medication? You know, that's my wife still has to handle that for me, because if I fuck it up, it's going to mess with my heart because I take heart medication.
You got those little containers Monday through Friday.
No, I got them AM, PM. I'm that dumb.
Okay.
Every day, AM, PM. Hey, I can't even do it.
It's not dumb, though. We know that we've got brain. Yeah, well, we but, know
yeah.
this.
Yeah.
No, it's taken a long time to figure this out. And this is the other caveat I'm throwing on top of this all. When a warfighter's trying to get through this, they're trying to get through it with only part of their cognitive brain. Cognitive meaning ability to understand.
My friends know I can't go anywhere.
Why wouldn't it? Yeah, and so you throw all this. This is, we just talked about the medical shit going on with this warfighter. What happens sociologically with this warfighter? They go to court. They go on divorce court. They have their kids taken away from them. Now you don't want to fucking kill yourself? Are you kidding me? What are you, a Superman? Who the fuck wouldn't kill themselves under those conditions?
Right.
Yep.
And that's why we've had a problem. And every one of these little tiny things needs to be unraveled. And the way we unravel them is to be able to intellectualize the fact that they exist and have the conversation. 10 years ago, when you tried to go get an apartment and you had the PTSD phobia was unfucking real. You tried to get an apartment. They looked at your application and said, you were in the military? They wouldn't rent you a fucking apartment. Trying to go get a job, 46% of human resources managers said hiring a veteran is a challenge because of PTSD. They didn't even know what PTSD was.
He got the PTSD. Oh, my God, he's a psychopath.
Yeah, they honestly, because of movies and warfighters with PTSD.
You want them Rambo guys.
They treated us all like we were ready to have a psychotic break at any moment.
Yep.
A-walk-y. Which made us want to have a psychotic break at any moment.
Right. We need to take a quick break. You're listening to the Service Dog Show with our special guest Boone Cutler right here on DV Radio, WDVR.
DV Radio.
Shooters Express is Charlotte's number one destination for all personal defense, sport, instruction, and recreational shooting supplies. They offer concealed carry classes for only $29.95. That's only $29.95 for concealed carry classes. And if you're military or law enforcement, you'll receive great deals and be eligible for even more at Shooters Express. So head over to Shooters Express in Belmont, North Carolina, or visit shootersexpress.com for more information and monthly deals. That's Shooters Express in Belmont, North Carolina.
This is not a paid endorsement from Shooters Express and is provided solely by DV Radio free of charge.
On February 5th, the Department of Transportation published a set of proposed rule changes for air travel with service dogs in the Federal Register. This 94-page document is complex, but could have an adverse effect on the lives of every disabled handler of a task-trained service dog, as well as the disabled owners of emotional support animals. The future of equal rights for disabled people as we know it could be jeopardized by some of these proposed rule changes. As stakeholders, it is in the best interest of all disabled people to register their comments on this NPRM before the deadline of April 6th, 2020. Please go to the regulations.gov website, search for the notice titled Traveling by Air with Service Animals, and click on the Comment Now link in the upper right corner to make your voice heard. Remember to be polite and professional so that your comment will be registered. Together, we can ensure that the voices of disabled handlers of task-trained service dogs are heard.
DV Radio.
Are you looking for veteran resources and peer support? Objective Zero has an app for that. Download the Objective Zero app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Access wellness resources like yoga and a free year subscription to Headspace, the world's most popular meditation app. Check out veterans resources and access our nationwide network of peer support. Speak to fellow women veterans or someone in your field and branch of service. You get to choose who you want to chat with. Learn more at www.objectivezero.org. That's www.objectivezero.org.
Welcome back to the Service Dog Show. I'm your host, Joaquin Watai, also known as PTS Dog.
And I'm your host, Scav.
With us is Boone Cutler. Boone, we've gone down a rabbit hole, which is why we brought you on and talked about a lot of the things, a lot of these factors that add up to, I guess you could call it the warfighter condition or the veteran condition. It's these things that veterans are carrying around. And you talked a little bit, you touched a little bit about on some alternative treatments. And I know that if the audience doesn't know, you've been very active in the medical use of cannabis, stem cells, obviously. And I have to tell you that, yes, absolutely, sleep apnea. Look, guys, if you've ever had a TBI, if you have the PTSD, go do a sleep study.
The PTSD. It just still kills
me. Fucking suck it up and go do a sleep study. Nah, it's not fun. It sucks.
I'm going to tell you straight up, my wife's a sleep lab tech, respiratory therapist, and that shit will fucking kill you.
Yes, absolutely. I got to tell you, my life turned around when I got a sleep study and got a CPAP and started actually sleeping at night instead of stopping breathing 116 times an hour.
You will die in your sleep and not, yeah. You have no idea. You're just going to.
If you don't take anything else away from this program, go get a damn sleep study.
But yeah, I mean, it really is stupid. It's stupid not to. It's really stupid not to. You know, I was stupid not to. I didn't know. And so that's why it's really good to push the awareness. And let me make this caveat. There's guys out there who are going to be just like I was. Oh, sleep apnea? That just means you need to lose some weight. Do some more PT. Oh, it causes high blood pressure? Well, just take your high blood pressure medications. No, that's not what we're talking about.
No, it's
central
not.
Sleep, there are two types of sleep apnea. Obstructive sleep apnea and central sleep apnea. Obstructive sleep apnea, there are cases that it can be overcome. Not an issue. Central sleep apnea that comes from brain damage and TBI cannot be overcome. It requires a machine. If you do not get a machine to sleep when you have central sleep apnea, it will turn into a heart condition, stroke, weight gain, metabolic lag. It's on and on and on and on. Basically, you're going to get fat and you're going to die.
Mm-hmm. I wish you
was
here
long before you should.
If she was here, I'd throw her the mic and let her fucking just bitch this up, man, because you're straight up. I mean, I'm 190 pounds, 6 foot one, and you're talking straight up, dude. It's not fat people. It's not overweight people. It's healthy people dying or sleep over this shit.
Mm-hmm. It's, yeah. And that's just...
Yeah, here's what central sleep apnea does. When you lay down to go to sleep, your brain stops telling your body to breathe. That has nothing to do with anything other than you have brain damage.
People that run 10 miles a day die in their sleep.
Yeah.
Right, exactly right. And so it has nothing to do with you being with people being lazy. It's brain damage. Central, there's two types of sleep apnea. I'm telling people again, I didn't know, they should know. And central sleep apnea is from brain damage. If you've had brain damage, you probably have central sleep apnea, which will result in your death.
Mm-hmm.
You require a machine to sleep. They don't tell you this. My conspiracy theory on it is, why tell you about this and give you a machine that'll fix all these problems? Why not just give you drugs for all the symptoms you have because you have the problem?
Yep.
Don't fall into their bullshit. Just go get a sleep study. Learn to sleep with the fucking machine on. Don't tell me you can't, because you can.
Yep.
You just have to want to do it. You've done harder things. It's not fucking hard. They've got tons
cool
of different masks.
Yep. You'll sound like Dr.
Top Gear. You can wear a CPAP.
I tell people, it's a supercharger for a sex machine, okay? Just wear the fucking thing.
Right. Yep. You'll sound like Darth Vader all night. You'll be good.
Mine's quiet as hell. You can't hear mine at all. Mine doesn't keep me awake. I can't hear anything. That's another thing that people walk away from. You can't hear it. It doesn't keep you awake.
The science
you're gonna sleep
this
better.
Shit is so high tech now that it's ridiculous.
Yeah. Please go get tested. Go do a sleep study. It's not fun. We know this. And most likely won't be able to take your service dog, but it's worth one night away.
Actually,
could
you
do yours? Can you? Okay.
Because it's not a sterile environment.
True, true. But when I did mine, they asked me not to, simply because he does nightmare interruption.
So well,
they need
that might be a problem.
Yeah, they need to be able to determine whether I was waking up because I was stopping breathing, or I was waking up because the dog was, you know, stopping a nightmare.
Well, I guess it depends on the task training.
Yeah, yeah, that's just one of his tasks.
Talk to your sleep lab tech before you take your dog.
Yeah.
Yeah, they just want you to sleep. I mean, I'm in a legal state. I did not take my test at the VA. It was not on federal property. I was on state property.
Well, and, that's the other thing. The VA is so booked up right now that they're pawning this shit off on civilian hospitals. My wife's getting a lot of VA stuff at a civilian hospital, and then they're billing the VA.
It's I brought a vape pen, and I was smoking weed in the room. They're like, we don't care how you get to sleep, just go to sleep. And so I literally got high from my test because that's how I go to sleep. It's just how I go to sleep. They didn't care. And the room, I thought it was like going to be like a sterile, like you're going to be on a gurney and like an EEG, you know, like someone's going to be
a hotel room.
It's a hotel room with a TV. They give you the remote and they just say, hey, you know, watch TV, fall asleep, whatever. Yeah. You know, it's totally, they don't come in, they don't check on you. You know, it's really, they make it very, very easy, very comfortable. Yeah, you got to put on a skull cap and wires and put the thing on your face.
Just but, an FYI, you know, don't expect to sleep naked. They don't like that shit, and it's not going to happen.
My experience, I did it at the Detroit VA, and so my experience is a little more regimented, but it still was like a hotel room, but the tech woke me up at like 2:30 in the morning and said, put this on, strap the CPAP on me.
Hey, Walkie.
Like, oh. And then they did the adjustments for the pressure and all of that. But I tell you, I do not regret going through that in any way, shape, or form. It changed my life.
Don't try and bring weed to the VA if you do. Okay, if you're at the VA,
that's federal,
no naked, no weed. But I mean, if you're in a legal state, there's no problem with it.
We'll try to get Rebecca in on a 15 or 20 minute clip one show so she can
talk about it. I didn't realize she was a respiratory tech. My respiratory guy told me that he said, man, you must be one stubborn son of a bitch. He said, this isn't something I stopped breathing 116 times an hour. He said, this isn't something that happens overnight. You've been dealing with this for years. How you had a successful career in the Navy is beyond me because you've been borderline psychotic for years.
You're a stubborn prick.
Yeah, well, you know, that's how we do. It's that warfighter spirit. Boone, I really appreciate you coming on and taking the time to talk to us a little bit about kind of the atmosphere and the history and why we see so much resistance to most alternative modalities of treatment, not just service dogs, but seeing it wrapped up and seeing that, you know, there's still you had to go out of the country for the stem cell therapy that saved your life.
I've got one question for him before you go there. Yeah,
go ahead.
Why Panama?
That was where that was the only place that had any literature stating that they'd had success with heart failure. And I needed to get out. I had three major things going on at the same time. I had heart failure, polycythemia vera, and cardiomyopathy. My injection fraction of my heart was down to 30. And there was no way, that's the death spiral. I wasn't going to pull out of it. And because of the kidney issues and I wasn't going to be able to do a heart transplant. That just wasn't on the table. So there were a lot of issues going on. And we just literally rolled the dice. You know, we found a place that said they'd had success with it and we had nothing to lose. But I didn't have time to try it twice either.
Right.
You know, I just didn't have the time. I was supposed to be dead by last April.
Well,
that's statistically speaking. And so we didn't have time to do it twice. And we found the place that said they'd had success with it. And we booked the appointment. It took me months to get in. And it was I had a 60% chance of dying every time I went to sleep. And we had to wait months to get in. So I literally sat in my deathbed for a while and got the opportunity to experience that and go through what that is all about. And so I know a little bit more and one thing I do know more than anything is you don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. You should really avoid that. It's watching your family suffer every fucking day. I mean literally suffer, because you're laying there suffering is a fucked up thing to do to them if you can avoid it.
Right.
And if you've got kids, if you've got a spouse that you love and you can avoid putting them through this, what kind of asshole are you for not doing it? We've just told you. Now you know you're culpable. You're responsible for this shit now. It's not like you don't know. So I can tell you, you know, my wife had to push me in a wheelchair to Panama. We didn't know if I was going to live to get to there. You know, I couldn't make it by the time I went to Panama, I couldn't walk from the bathroom, from my bed to the bathroom without taking a break half the way. I couldn't brush my teeth without being out of breath. I couldn't stand and brush my teeth. It was horrible. And I was very cognizant over how my family was suffering. They were troopers. There were no tears. There was no bullshit. You know, they did what they needed to do. They came together as a team. I was very proud of them. I honestly couldn't be more proud. That's something that positive that came out of it. But I didn't know if I could have avoided putting them through that, I would have, but I didn't know. That's why we got to get the word out. And then it's on you, you know, I mean, if you've just heard this and you know, you're sitting in that boat and you don't do it, well, fine, fuck off. It's on you. But you were told. You were told.
Yeah, I was just curious because Panama is like an awesome country. I loved everything about that country when I was there. And I think they're the tits. I mean, they're doing a lot of good research and they can do things that the U.S. can't.
Well, I'm grateful for one that you did get the treatment. And I'm thankful for you to you for joining us. Before we wrap things up, I do want you to talk a little bit about the Spartan Pledge. I think it's important. Our audience is primarily veterans, and a lot of people don't know who Boone Cutler is and don't know or maybe they've just heard the Spartan Pledge, but they didn't know where it came from. So could you give us a as brief a version as possible and just where it came from and why?
Well, the Spartan Pledge didn't start out the Spartan Pledge. It just came. It just was a conversation between myself and a brother I was in Iraq with, and the topic of suicide came up. And we both made a pact with each other that, you know, we can't stop each other. Neither one of us can stop the other person. Once you make a decision, make a decision. But, you know, don't leave me spinning around this fucking planet without knowing what the hell happened, because I'm going to wreck the rest of my life thinking about what you did and why it happened and could I have done something and so on and so forth. So don't be a bitch. Fucking call me first. Get in touch with me. And we both had that same sentiment for each other because, you know, there's no greater love. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so my brother and I, we made that pact with each other. And then I started doing it with other guys. And they started doing it with different people the same way. Well, that morphed. I ended up talking to Carl Monger about it. He says, hey, we really got to think about what we can do, you know, to empower people. And I said, well, here's what me and my friends do. And he's like, wow, we should really do something with that. You know, maybe we should put that into, a way that could be shared, something. And then my PSYOP brain got turned on. I'm like, oh, a campaign. I can do that, you know? Mm-hmm. And so we basically just developed the pledge into two sentences. And those two sentences in and of themselves, the reason they work is because they're very tied directly to a warfighter's way of life, their mind. You know, it has to do with a battle buddy and having a mission and being in a group and having a group mission, which is what we require. We require that. That's what our personalities require as warfighters.
Absolutely.
And so it's really about we just basically turned the warrior ethos on its head and put it in two sentences that applies to what happens after you get out. And it's a battle drill. The Spartan Pledge is a battle drill. It's what to do when you don't know what to do. So we put it in battle drill form. And the whole thing just works. I mean, what's your experience? How do you guys feel about it?
I think it's probably one of the most brilliant little pieces of literature ever written, because it absolutely, like you said, it touches on the warrior ethos, and it holds you accountable to one another in a way that you didn't have until you got in the military. And when you got out of the military, you missed. And to me, it just, that the fact that it brings back that battle buddy accountability, I mean, I could relate it exactly to handling my service dog. You know, in a lot of ways, the give and take that we have is that same kind of a battle buddy mentality where, you know, I guide him and when it's necessary, he guides me. He just doesn't use words.
Right.
You know? I think it's applicable to any warfighter.
I've lost.
It's only two sentences. Go ahead, brother. Please.
No, I've lost so many. It's just unbelievable. And when you read those sentences, man, it strikes a nerve. Mm-hmm. And it's just when Joaquin told me he landed you for the show, I was like, "You're fucking kidding me." And
the
he's like,
"Sentence is the best sentence."
He's like, "No." I'm like, "You got Boone." He's like, "No, I got Boone." I'm like, "Well, let's do this."
Yep. So, the second sentence is the first sentence is that accountability. The second sentence, though, the dedication of my first book is the puppy saved my life. The dog gave me a mission. And guess what my mission is? It's to find a mission to help my warfighter brethren. And that's, I mean, literally my whole life revolves around that mission of reaching out and helping veterans who are looking for help with PTSD and think, hey, what about a service dog? That's what I do. And so I think, you know, it's powerful. The Spartan Pledge is a powerful thing.
Absolutely. As a community, we are trained, we are, and it's affirmed, you know, selfless service. That doesn't exist in other walks of life. And we're also extremist and extremely competitive. I mean, we are competitive motherfuckers, competitive as hell all the time. So when you put those two things together to compete at being selfless, well, when you put that on the platform or paradigm of a team, now you've reestablished a part of our identity that we require.
Absolutely agree.
And in the civilian world, it's just, you need that.
Yeah. That backup's important.
A battle buddy and a mission. Those are the two things a warfighter must have.
Yep. Absolutely agree. And you know, the thing that I love about that second sentence is my mission is to find a mission. I love it. It's like, look, this is your job. Make that change. Become that change. Be the person that reaches out because you see there's a problem and there's a hole and it needs to be filled. Yep. I love that.
If you don't have a mission, you need to be looking for one. Period.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
And so you until you mission. Find it.
You know, and maybe you
until you find
mission.
It.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So your mission is always to find a mission or have a mission. If you don't have one, your mission is to be finding it.
Yep. I love it. Inspiring. It is inspiring, and I'm grateful to you for bringing that to the community. I really am. Where can people
find me? I can't help but people find me, so I don't even have to tell you.
They're going to find you whether you want them to or not.
Yeah, people who want to find me. It just happens. But, you know, I've got social media out there, and I've got I got Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, whatever. And, you know, SpartanPledge@gmail.com is, you know, people can reach me there. Mm-hmm. I love doing Spartan Pledge ceremonies, and I'm going to share with you guys. Did you guys see the speech I did at that expo?
That's what gave me the idea to reach out, because that ceremony, man.
Ooh. Oh, that was a hard one.
Yeah. If you wouldn't mind sharing with the link with this show, if you wouldn't mind sharing that too, so people can see, you know, basically what this is all about, how it mm-hmm. became, what our history is. And then culminating in a very, very intense Spartan Pledge ceremony with a group of leaders and a mother who lost her son to suicide. It's huge. If you wouldn't mind, sharing that link and or at least promoting people to watch that speech and that ceremony I think we can get further faster.
It'll be included in the show and in the posts. Absolutely. Yeah,
it'll be our pleasure.
HPTS Dog and in my group.
Thank you guys.
It's already been on my page, but I'll put it right back up.
Absolutely share it again. And that, like I said, I saw that and I'm like, Boone's back. Because, you know, you were down for a while healing, and which is fine. You need to take that time for self-care. So
I was dying for 2 years.
Yeah, you took a little hiatus there, and I was worried about you. I wondered where you went, but now it makes sense.
Yeah.
No, I'm back, man. I'm at the top of the hill telling everybody what the path is, and I'm just here to help. Good.
Yeah, I got a couple of your podcasts, and you're not off beat, let me tell you.
We appreciate you coming, man. Folks, this has been a fun show. This has been a conversation I've been wanting to have for 3 years, Boone. So I'm very grateful to have you.
Thank you. It's my pleasure, brother.
Dude, if you ever need anything from us.
If And yeah, if you don't take anything else from this show, folks, it's don't give up. Boone was dying and found a way. There's always a way. There is always a way to survive. Been listening to the Service Dog Show right here on DV Radio, WDBR. We'll see you next week.
DV Radio.